Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Welcome in to the RotoWire NFL podcast brought to you by our friends over at Dynasty Owner and our friends over at FanDraft. I'm your host, John McKechnie, joined as always by Mario Puig. Today we are going to deviate a little bit from the usual NFL content, and we are going to look ahead to next year's future stars, the guys that are going to be headlining the NFL draft. Obviously, this past year felt like a pretty historic wide receiver class in terms of its depth and top-end talent, and we won't be missing much of that with this upcoming class. I mean, you're talking about guys like Ja'Marr Chase out of LSU. You've got Jalen Waddle, Devontae Smith out of Alabama, and those are just a couple of the guys that we're going to get into. So, Mario, I know that you help out with the college football projection side of things, and you know that helps maybe give you an under the hood look at some of the names that you've been hearing about over the course of the last year, maybe 2 years, or what have you. But in going through some of these projections and everything like that, you now have a pretty good understanding of how ridiculous and how deep some ends of this receiver pool are.
Yeah, and as you said, it's even though it wasn't even valued that highly at the time, the receiver class from 2 years ago also, and then of course this year's like the AJ Brown, DK Metcalf one in hindsight probably was even stronger than the one from this year, even though we were more ready to give that first round stamp to the guys like Judy and CeeDee Lamb and Ruggs, as it turned out. But both of those are really sick, and then there's still some more seemingly like rock solid star talent coming in the upcoming year or two. So this receiver class, I'll have to lean on you quite a bit for actually like the outside of the obvious cases. I'll need, and even in those cases, I'll need you to kind of fill in some of the blanks for me. I don't know who these guys are, like Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle. Certainly Ja'Marr Chase, who probably would have been the number one. I guess there's a case to make that all of Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle, and Ja'Marr Chase could have been the top receiver in this most recent draft. But Chase especially, he looks like he's kind of the next singularly anticipated receiver, even though there's other guys like Amon Ra St. Brown who could be also like a top 12, I think, kind of receiver pick.
So he's definitely talented. Obviously, you may have heard of his brother, Equanimeous St. Brown, and Osiris St. Brown plays for Stanford. But yeah, like you were saying, Ja'Marr Chase, a ridiculous talent, one that definitely could have challenged to be that number one guy this year. And I value Jalen Waddle in a similar light.
Me too.
The true sophomore last year, you know, even in an Alabama receiving corps. So we'll talk about Chase here in a second, but I guess we'll just start in Tuscaloosa. We'll start with the Alabama guys. And we got a lot of other guys to get to as well. We got Rashad Bateman, Tylan Wallace, Chris Olave at Ohio State, who I don't think gets quite enough love. Tamorion Terry, Sage Surratt, and Amon-Ra St. Brown. But rolling back to the Tide here, Jalen Waddle, I was talking to Nick Whalen about this on the College Football Podcast yesterday. It felt like during the Iron Bowl this year, when Alabama played Auburn, pretty high stakes game, of course, that Waddle was simply the best player on the field, period. He had in that one game, he had four targets. He caught all four of them, so that's good. 98 yards off of those four targets, so close to 25 yards per. And then three touchdowns on those four catches, and also ran a kickback for a touchdown. So he had six total touches. I think he had a couple of kick returns, but one of them went back to the house. And it's just like, this guy is just playing at a different speed than everybody else. He has a feel for the game. Like, his spatial awareness is crazy. His ability, like, once he has the ball in his hands to analyze where to go with it is rare, to say the least. And you know, this is a guy who really is going to take off this year. Like, he was able to do that with Jerry Jeudy and with Henry Ruggs eating up a lot of the targets for Alabama. Now he gets to shine alongside Devontae Smith, where I think that, you know, for the first time in a couple years, we're going to see this Alabama distribution tree get trimmed down a little bit. It's going to be kind of narrow. And I think, you know, for your college fantasy football players, it's going to be a lot more predictable, a lot less of a headache of playing like the whack-a-mole of which Alabama receiver is going off this week, because I think with Jeudy and with Ruggs being gone, it's going to be Smith or Waddle or both day more often than not, and you're not going to have to worry as much about a Javon Baker or a Slade Bowden or a John Mechie, those guys producing the way that like a Jalen Smith or Jalen Waddle or Devontae Smith would for like the Jeudy Ruggs investors a year ago.
Yeah, I mean, I know this isn't anything solid that anyone can use, but for what it's worth, Waddle, when I saw Waddle play for the first few times, I pretty much immediately had that sort of, crap, this guy's the truth kind of thing hit me. Like, it's not that many receivers that I have that hit me right away when I first watched them. It's like Jalen Reagor was one of those guys where it's just like, you look at him and you're like, oh, this guy's different. Something's different about this one. And Waddle definitely fits it. I mean, I know that a lot of people are ranking Devontae Smith as the better of the two, but to me, Waddle's kind of clearly the better prospect. And I don't mean to bash Smith. Like, I think even if Smith is a clear first round pick, then I think that just means Waddle's like a top 15 kind of guy to me. So he's going into his third year, I believe, with the team, and Smith is going into his fourth.
Correct.
And so, like, Smith has to be putting up bigger numbers than Waddle to this point. Like, he needs to do that to hold serve basically as a prospect. Like, him outproducing Waddle is not him distancing himself from Waddle. It's him keeping Waddle from running past him, because Waddle, I mean, he's caught 78 of 101 targets for, what is this, 1,408 yards. Through 2 years, that's insane. And he's doing the kick return touchdowns, the punt return touchdowns. Every time he gets the ball, however they need to get him the ball, he's just murdering people in the field. So I think Waddle's going to be the truth, even if Smith is something really good himself. Like, what do you think Smith is? Is he almost like a – might he be the answer to the question that we've been tormented by? Like, what if Devin Smith never got hurt out of Ohio State? Because he seems like he's just kind of like a kill shot kind of guy, right?
Yeah, he is. He really – so because he was in that same recruiting class as Jeudy and Ruggs, like he kind of didn't get quite the attention he deserved. And obviously he had the kill shot that I'm very familiar with against the University of Georgia in the national title game. But yeah, I mean, he's just someone that you throw the ball in his direction, like deep down the field. I mean, he's going to make a huge play. I mean, 18 and a half yards per reception last year, 13.8 yards per target. That's incredible efficiency and also explosiveness on top of it. And, you know, 14 touchdowns on 91 targets is insane. I think a lot of that is buoyed by his just sheer dismantling of the University of Mississippi program, where he had 5 touchdowns on 12 targets and 11 catches in that game. That was one where I think I like stacked Judy and Ruggs or something in DFS. So of course, that's what ended up happening. But yeah, Devontae Smith, just because he didn't come out this past year as a true junior, I think that it was almost smart in a way, because I think now he really gets to be have that spotlight shine on him this year in a way that it just never truly did last year, even though he was deserving. He was immensely productive last year, even alongside Judy and Ruggs.
Yeah, I will say, without knowing the workout numbers of any of these guys, Devontae Smith's frame is a little bit of a concern to me. Not in the concern like, oh, I'm worried he isn't good, actually. But if people are going to set their hopes as like a top 15 sort of valuation for him as an NFL prospect, then being listed at 6'1", 175 going into your fourth year, we start to kind of put the pressure on him to either get more towards 6'1", 190 kind of weight, or you better be ready to run a 4.35 and not worse than that, because we're talking about guys like Waddle, we're talking about Ja'Marr Chase, Amon-Ra St. Brown. To go at the top in an era of competition like this, you need to be kind of pretty close to perfect. So there's no shame in ending up kind of a pick 20 through 32 kind of prospect instead. But I kind of think that's where I expect Smith to go at the moment, at least in the context of a class that also would include Chase and St. Brown and the other ones, of course.
Yeah, that's a legitimate concern. That's a very like thin frame, and Alabama lost their strength and conditioning coach this past off season. So hopefully he's been hitting the weights during quarantine a little bit and can bulk up a little bit. And still maintain that killer speed that he possesses. But yeah, it's hard to imagine either of Smith or Waddle falling outside of like the top five receivers that end up going in next year's draft. Let's stay in the SEC. Let's move on over to really like the man of the hour, the reigning Biletnikoff Award winner, the odds-on favorite to maybe do it again this year, Ja'Marr Chase out of LSU. And he actually has a teammate who is remarkably talented as well, who had a big run in last year's LSU's magical season, but maybe doesn't get talked about quite enough. But I think that he is definitely NFL caliber talent as well, and that's Terrace Marshall. But let's lead things off with Chase.
Right. I guess he's also the one with the least to say. It's kind of hard to even begin making the skeptics' case against him. I guess there's a chance that he kind of has athletic testing along the lines of Jerry Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb, where we had our hopes of both of those guys being top 10 picks, and then their athletic testing was more slightly above average than safely above average. Ja'Marr Chase, he's listed at 6'208" going into last year, so this is a guy who might measure in once you do like the combine bulk up and everything and the athletic testing training. He might measure in at something like 5'11", 210. So that would almost be like a Debo kind of frame. And yet, unlike Debo, Chase has basically like an infallible downfield skill set. So it's interesting what that sort of frame, especially if he tests safely above average with the 40 and the jumps and everything else, that kind of frame projects very well for yards after the catch to whatever extent that he could be used for it. But you look at his LSU tape from last year and his numbers from last year, and it's like, it looks like he might just kind of get open so much that he doesn't need these short passes that you know, he doesn't need to break tackles and run after the catch the way a Debo kind of receiver would. He can just dictate damage like all over the field.
And he crushed AJ Terrell in the national championship game. You know, like that's a first round cornerback type of deal, and he was beating, I mean, he had 9 catches for 221 and 2 in that game.
you look through his game log from last year on the RotoWire player page, especially, it's funny to look at this because it has the target count and the yardage and the catches, of course, but then it has the yards per target calculation right there for you. And you look in the second half of the year, it's 14.7 yards per target against Clemson, and he caught 9 of 15 passes. 20.3 yards per target against Oklahoma, 21.9 against A&M, 22.7 against Mississippi. And it's like he's catching 8 of 10. He's catching 6 of 8. These are just these are complete defensive collapses. Like not in the sense that like they're letting him do this. It's like this is a player who's producing at a level where the defense is effectively helpless. Like they can't do anything about this. So he won't have Burrow this year, and that'll give the defenses a fighting chance against him. But production like this, I guess it's something like you'd have to go back to like Michael Crabtree at Texas Tech to find the last time that a receiver was doing just like stupid numbers like this. And there's no Big 12 level of competition explanation for how those numbers happen. It's like Chase is just the blue chip version. Like there is no system detail propping up his numbers.
I think LSU had 7 wins against teams that were ranked at the top 10 at the time, or inside the top 10 at the time of their game. So like, yeah, like you were saying, he wasn't going against, you know, he wasn't just beating up on the Arkansas's of the world. Like he was crushing it against very, very legit competition. And yeah, I think it is important to frame the perspective of what his 2020 production could look like. And I feel like prospect analysts, a lot of the times in draft Twitter, can kind of lose sight of a season. Like I don't know if
they lose perspective. They fixate on, and this is
whatever the most recent year was.
Yeah, the shiniest most recent thing. It's understandable. I think both of us probably fall to it too. But sure, like we have to as prospect evaluators, we have to have that step in our process that where we go, okay, I'm settled down now. That was fun or whatever. It was cool to get all hammed up about this player and use superlatives and ridiculous comparisons. That's all fun. That's part of the process. I get it. But we have to stop for a second and sit down and center our perspective over like at least a 2 or 3 year timeline and try to remember the way everything happened and like the conditions that come with the numbers and keep a full context perspective on things. Because yeah, you're going to have these people. If there is, you know, a season where the SEC at least can play, Chase is going to be out there going against the best defenses in the country with a quarterback who's nowhere near what was last year.
Yeah,
so
it's immortal, you know.
Yeah, it's there's no way for him to do what happened in the best offensive season in college football history. And yet you are going to have people who say he didn't do what he did last year.
Product of the system.
Raises a concern that it doesn't raise a concern that anything just either you believe Justin Jefferson should have been like a 5th round pick, or you're not ready to make a convincing argument that Chase is anything but a top 20 kind of pick. Cause he had the harder task too. Like Justin Jefferson, to be clear, I think he's good. I think he's good. I think Terrace Marshall's good, but Chase had he had the most attention of the defense, and he still did the most voluminous damage at the highest efficiency level too. This is just a player who was truly unstoppable.
Yes. So really that there's like barring an injury or anything that there's no reason to give him like the LaVisca Chenault treatment where like his junior year is worse than his sophomore year and it causes his draft stock to slide. Like you got to keep that perspective in what that 2019 LSU offense was and you know how impressive Chase was within it, but you know also realizing that it's basically impossible to replicate that level of production when you basically had an NFL quarterback at an advanced age calling the shots with an NFL, you know, almost cheat code level offensive coordinator or play designer and Joe Brady just bringing LSU into the 21st century with authority.
Did you ever stop to think, like I'm just doing it now for the first time, like how insane it is that he had 20 receiving touchdowns and 84 receptions? Like I can understand 20 touchdown receptions if it's the Mike Leach, Michael Crabtree thing. It's like, oh, he caught 125 passes and scored 20 touchdowns. Like 84 receptions and 20 touchdowns?
Basically one out of every 4 of his catches is going to the house.
Yeah, and he's catching 2/3 of his targets with an average – two-thirds of your targets while averaging 21 over 21 yards per catch. I don't know. I think that this is probably a receiver who excels in basically every single receiver task.
Yes. And it's not like Justin Jefferson in the sense where you also had to reconcile his like poor like recruiting profile. And it's like, how is this happening with a two-star guy? It's like, no, Chase was supposed to be like this, and he just is, and then more so. Like, he was like a top-level receiver recruit that just happens to have not only lived up to the hype but exceeded it in a way that few ever can, especially when the bar is set as high as it was. So, yeah, he's unbelievable.
What do you think about Marshall? Do you expect him to push for the first round too? Because just looking at his numbers from last year, it's of course much less volume, both because he got hurt and because he just wasn't the starting slot receiver. And then no one can beat Jamar Chase outside, but he caught 46 of 66 targets for also his touchdown rate is even dumber than Chase's, 13 on 46 catches.
See? Yeah. So people don't talk about Terrace Marshall enough, and he's a bigger body. He's not quite as dense as Chase, but 6'3", 200. Is that a DJ Chark type of frame, if I remember correctly?
Chark was more like 6'4", 190 or something coming out. And he's probably like a 6'4", 200 kind of thing right now.
Okay.
But yeah, he ran like low 4.3s. And Marshall, there's no particular reason to bet against his athleticism. I haven't looked at the tape closely enough to think any particular thing, but that many touchdowns with a frame like that, catch rate like that, and that kind of distance. And you got to factor in like the difficulty of catching those passes in that part of the field. Like it's a lot harder to make those catches in the red zone than it is when you have 80 yards of defense to work with.
Absolutely. So yeah, what these guys are doing is unbelievable. So we'll see what regression looks like when you move from Joe Burrow to Miles Brennan. Miles Brennan has been kind of anointed as the savior of this LSU like quarterback drought. But then again, they did take Joe Burrow as a graduate transfer. We saw how that worked out, and it's kind of amazing that Brennan stuck around through it, because we do see quarterbacks, once they see that it's going to be more than 1 year that they have to sit behind a veteran, then they start exploring their options. But Brennan still there. This will be, I think, his fourth year on campus. I think he redshirted as a freshman. So this is his time to shine. And I think that he will. But then also, again, LSU doesn't have Joe Brady also. So we'll see how much of Steve Ensminger, kind of kept Joe Brady's playbook type of thing and can make things work in a similar way. I think that LSU just lost too much to the draft for them to be a national title contender again this year, but they're still recruiting extremely well. They're still going to be really, really tough to beat.
They might have the two best players in the country still between Chase and Stingley.
Stingley's a freak. And then if you want to look a little bit closer, even at maybe like a freshman that to keep an eye out for, Arik Gilbert, the tight end, he's just a monster. There's really no other way of putting it. It's very rare to see the recruiting sites give a five-star to a tight end, but he was deserving of it. I don't know how much volume he's going to get. I don't think he's going to get like the Thaddeus Moss type of volume, but in terms of just like tight end prospects to dream on, like, he kind of has it. So keep that name in the back of your mind, Arik Gilbert. All right, who do we want to get into next? Should we move to the Big Ten?
Well, what about, let's think. So we got Jamar Chase ranked one. We have, like, in some order or another, Waddle, Devontae Smith in the top five. But where do you put Amon-Ra St. Brown? Because I'm having trouble convincing myself that he isn't the second best receiver. Okay. I guess I'm probably going to defer to Waddle just because something's just crazy about him. The way he just dominates through this point, and he's going to be in his third year. I wouldn't be surprised if he turns into one of those kind of 20 touchdown receivers. So I don't want to mess with Waddle too much, but I feel like Amon-Ra St. Brown cannot be worse than the third best draft eligible receiver right now.
Okay. Let's explore that a little bit, because you did the USC projections. So you took a closer look under the hood of what he could look like for this 2020 season. He had a remarkable year last year, and I feel like it kind of flew under the radar. Like, USC kind of they got their backs pushed against the wall when their quarterback was lost for the season, and then they found Keaton Slovis kind of like finding like a $100 bill in your wallet or in your pocket.
A few of them, yeah.
It just ridiculous. And he was able to support not only a lot of production for Michael Pittman and Tyler Vaughns, but then also Amon-Ra St. Brown and Drake London. So the crazy group of pass catchers at USC.
Yeah.
Now Pittman's gone, so that's more targets to be distributed. Amon-Ra St. Brown, different build than his older brother Equanimeous, checking in at like 6'1", 195, so probably just operates more. He comparatively, I mean, he would work out of the slot, but I think he works outside as well.
Yeah, I think he can play everywhere. They list him at 6'1", 195, and maybe he's not. Maybe he's like 5'11", 190 or something, but that would be okay.
Yeah.
And if he is 6'1", 195, then... I mean, I just don't see the argument against him in the top 15, because the deal with him is I shouldn't even have been so quick to give Waddle the deference there, because St. Brown has been lights out through 2 years, and he's in the same class as Waddle, so there's no like age advantage, there's no theoretical upside angle that Waddle has that Amon-Ra St. Brown does not. But yeah, basically through 2 years, it's like he's caught 133 passes already, 137 passes in 24 games. He's got it looks like a catch rate of just over 72, and the yardage per target is at 9.4. So this is 18, 19-year-old player in the Pac-12. During the Pac-12's probably best era of defense that I can remember, at least in a long time. And he's catching 72% of his passes at 9.4 yards per target while supporting a volume of 1,792 yards in his first 2 years. So now Pittman's out of the picture. I expect Drake London to be the actual main slot receiver in this offense, now that I think about it. At least when I was looking at the Drake London tape from last year, he seemed to be like a Jalen Hurd in the slot kind of player. He looks like he could be a problem. Who knows where it's headed? He has like some basketball crossover, so maybe that'll spook the NFL a little bit. But it seems like he's a better receiver than he is a basketball player, because he was just murdering last year, put up some big numbers against some of the biggest games for USC, even though he was a true freshman. And then so yeah, it's Pittman outside. Tyler Vaughns, I think, is kind of like the DeMarcus Lodge of this group. I think some people are going to convince themselves that he's good, because he did play right away, and he had a couple. He had one really good season, but he's older than these other ones, and he's had a couple concerning efficiency numbers. Like among the volume USC receivers going back like 15 years, Vaughns has the worst efficiency. It's like Deontay Burnett, I think, is a better player than Tyler Vaughns. Most people will disagree with that. Like Vaughns should get drafted. Burnett was not, but I just think that Burnett's pretty good, and Vaughns is probably, again, the DeMarcus Lodge, the wide receiver six in the NFL kind of prospect, whereas Amon St. Brown is going to be, as long as they're not creeped out by his family like they were with Equanimeous, but I guess they might be, who knows. But if he's all fairly assessed by the NFL, he looks like a top 15, and then who knows what happens with London, but he's probably gonna have a big year too.
Yes. So yeah, that USC, I love it when USC is good. I have no like rooting interest in them, but like it feels like what things are a little bit more on kilter in the college football universe when USC is fun to watch, and
it's good. Slovis is the real deal too. I mean, I know there's a chance that he's a flash in the pan or something, but Cody Kessler, even I tried to find like what is the worst possible scenario for Slovis, and it's like Kessler didn't do what Slovis did. Like no one's really done what Slovis did. He was doing, you know, like Sam Darnold is the last freshman quarterback I can remember who played like Slovis did, and Slovis was way better.
Yeah, and I think Darnold was a redshirt too.
Probably.
So yeah, Slovis like went to USC just kind of expecting to sit behind JT Daniels for 2 years, and like by the second week of September, now he's the starter. So that was amazing, and he wasn't even like that big of a big time recruit, yeah. At least relative to like the golden boys that you can kind of expect to go.
He fumbled a lot. He kind of turned it over quite a bit, but he was doing like Romo stuff in the way that you just, you know, eyes in the back of his head kind of moves, that exactly the kind of stuff you would think would explain the difference between like his recruiting profiles. Like, why is this guy whose only other offer is whatever, I'm just making it up, Wake Forest. It's like, why is he at USC? How did he do this as a true freshman at USC? And it's like, you watch him and it's just, he does stuff that, you know, they don't have to do with arm strength and size and athleticism, but it's just the inexplicable stuff he keeps doing over and over.
Exactly. He keeps stamping it. So, USC, fun to watch for this year, and St. Brown, chief among them. Let's move to Big Ten country. We got some interesting guys here. One guy who's coming off a huge season last year, and we'll need to, I don't know if he needs to like repeat it. But I think that there's going to be a microscope on Rashad Bateman in Minnesota. And then I think everyone is looking forward to what a bounce back could look like for Rondale Moore out of Purdue.
Yeah, Moore is really interesting. I guess I should have talked about him before now, because there's certainly a plenty good case to rank him as high or higher than Amon-Ra St. Brown and Jaylen Waddle. I don't think there's a case at this point to put Moore ahead of Jamar Chase, but there might be some truthers out there. Moore's good. There's no concern about him, you know, disappointing in the sense that he just isn't good in the NFL. It's just with Chase and St. Brown and Waddle, I think we have a lot of star potential indicators. With Moore, he has the star potential indicator in that he just had insane volume that true freshman year. I've got to say, though, as great as it was, and it is good to see, and as much as he was a better recruit than Purdue usually gets, so he actually has more recruiting pedigree than people might expect, and that's always good.
D'Angelo Yancey.
Yes, that David Bell guy, he might be good. He might be really good. But if he isn't really good, then we have to kind of start sniffing around the potential that there's a bit of a scheme sort of effect at play here. We'll see, though. More likely it's that they're both good. Moore is very good, and that Bell is good himself. But it's just like we got to like start paying attention to stuff like that once those sorts of trends emerge. I think with better health this year or whatever particular year, Moore would have just kind of had more production last year and would be more at the forefront as like a 1B to Chase. But to me, he's kind of it's like he doesn't have a big frame. He's 5'9", right?
Yes, he's 5'9", 180.
5'9", 180, which is fine. It's just that it's one of those things. He more trends toward the slot at a frame like that, where he will be very good. He should thrive in the slot. It just kind of it makes more narrow the path, and it makes more dependent on certain luck-based scenarios for him to reach the kind of upside that some of these other guys, like Chase, he can excel theoretically every particular way. So it's more easy for him. It's easier for him to kind of just stumble into a lucky scenario where he reaches a ceiling of any particular sort. Whereas Moore, it's like he needs the volume. They need to stick with him, because it's going to be more catches and yards after the catch than it is going to be touchdowns and you know, air yardage and things of that sort. So I would just qualify, like, he's not as well rounded upside wise, in my opinion, as guys like Waddle and Amon-Ra St. Brown and Jamar Chase. But he has that one angle at which that he's pretty much infallible at this point.
Yeah, he's ridiculous when it comes to that, and he is really tough with the ball in his hands. There is definitely, when you look at Purdue, though, just in general, the system is not really like any other that you see in the Big Ten. It's they throw it so much more, they run so much more tempo. You need to kind of be able to differentiate and not get lost in the volume, because the volume can be dizzying. Like his freshman year when he had 160 targets, like that's, you don't see that normally at the college football level. You gotta like keep that in perspective. Hopefully he stays healthy this year. And if he does, and then I do think that David Bell is like more of that traditional NFL prospect type of guy, although he was just a true freshman last year. But he's 6'2", 210. He was a big-time recruit by Purdue standards.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely buying him as one of the better rising sophomore receivers. So if those two are going together and there's at least competent quarterback play from Purdue one way or the other, they don't really have a true anointed starter at this point, but whoever it is, if they can just get the ball in their vicinity, Bell and Moore are going to go off. And I think you framed it well when it comes to Moore, that a lot of people got wrapped up in that freshman year, and a lot of it was tied to volume more than efficiency. But at the end of the day, he's still not someone that I want to bet against necessarily, even though that there are like some, like, you know, empirical factors working against him.
Yeah, he's got to be a really good athlete too. He should be just fine. I think the terms for him are such that like he needs to succeed in the slot, and if he doesn't, he's got a problem. However, we have every reason to believe he will do just that in the slot. So it's one. Maybe he doesn't have as many avenues as some of these other guys, but there's just not much reason to question that one avenue he has.
Right, exactly. All right, let's move on over to Rashad Bateman. So he busted out last year. Well, he actually kind of busted out as a true freshman, actually, which maybe even bolsters his prospect profile even more. But, you know, he was working alongside Tyler Johnson. Tyler Johnson was the guy that everyone knew these last couple of years. But Bateman, kind of the more explosive guy, on 98 targets last year, going for 1,219 yards and 11 scores, 60 catches there. So, I mean, just ridiculous production stuff that, like, you, Waylon put it a good way. It's like it looked like you just put an LSU receiver like on Minnesota's roster or something, the way that he looked, and like just how jarring it is to see a talent of his level at Minnesota. Like, you just don't really see it very often. So Bateman, 6'2", 210 listed. He's just an absolute stud. It'll be interesting though this year with Johnson being gone. Johnson, like having him opposite Bateman, made defenses kind of play this Minnesota offense a little more straight up. They couldn't just afford to double Tyler Johnson all the time, or Bateman was going to kill them, or vice versa. So now yeah. Bateman's going to have the full attention of opposing defenses, and Minnesota doesn't really have the next Tyler Johnson to really make defenses respect him, at least in the early going. Like, one of Chris Ottman-Bell, Demetrius Douglas, Clay Geary are going to have to prove to be a threat, because otherwise, like, we're going to see Bateman just kind of getting swarmed every time out.
Yeah, Bateman's one of those guys who I need to look at a bit more to know exactly what I think of him, but it is encouraging so far, because last year, as you said, was great. He caught what it must have been about 62% of his targets at over 12 yards a target. The Minnesota passing game was really effective, but that's still definitely above the baseline. Him and Tyler Johnson were both super productive, so it will be interesting to see how he does with that increased attention, like you said. And I guess the main question he has is the question of whether he can convince that he has an intermediate and underneath skill set, because we know now, yes, he can win deep all day, at least at the collegiate level, he can do that. And I'm encouraged by the fact that he's listed at 6'2", 210 going into his third year. That's the kind of guy who it's like, if they're going into their third year listed at 210 at receiver, it's like you can kind of believe it's more believable, the idea of them playing in the NFL at around that weight, because it's sometimes they just lie about how heavy these guys are. And sometimes it's understandably difficult to get into, you know, a professional athlete's sort of shape while you're supposed to be a student who isn't getting paid. So it's like sometimes these guys just can't really properly develop their frames until they get to the NFL. So that means, you know, it's like 6'2", 210. We don't have to worry about Bateman getting to the combine and only weighing in at like 196 or something. You know, mm-hmm. he's going to show up at least 205 and at least 6'1". And that means he's got the frame to conventionally project outside. So that's good to see, because it's like, if he needs to win outside and downfield, then we want to see him have an outside and downfield kind of frame and athletic trait set. So we have every reason to believe that he has that. And now it's the question of where his ceiling can go, and how consistent he can be as a pass catching threat is what can you do underneath and in the intermediate. That's where Tyler Johnson was automatic in that range. So we're going to find out if he can do anything like that. And if he can, that could raise him quite a bit. Like, I'm probably a little lower on Devontae Smith than most people. And I don't mean to be like bashing him or anything, but his frame being listed at 6'1", 175 going into his fourth year is the kind of thing that bugs me. Yes. Relative to a guy like Bateman. And they're fighting for like the same sort of job in the NFL. Like, we're downfield guys. And with Smith, I'm a little like less convinced that he's going to have the viable frame for that. It's not something that I'm ruling. I'm not like crossing him off or anything. I'm just saying there's more unknown there than there is in the case of Bateman. He's got the frame for sure. So we'll see. I have them ranked about the same. I have probably Chase, Waddle, St. Brown in some order, Chase in the first, and then the order of St. Brown and Waddle in some. I don't really care. And then I probably have probably have Rondale Moore ahead of Devontae Smith and Bateman, but I have Bateman and Devontae Smith in like the same tier. Like they're the same guy as based on what I know to this point.
Okay, just like those downfield assassin type of guys.
Yeah, it's like if you're looking for the particular role in question, it's like you're looking at both Smith and Bateman. If you're in the market for one, you're seriously considering the other two.
Yes, definitely. So ton to like about Bateman. And I'm interested to see because Minnesota lost their offensive coordinator. He's at Penn State now. Whether they stick with that philosophy of just run, run, deep shot as their kind of as the metronome of that offense, or if they do end up kind of varying up the philosophy and developing that underneath part of Bateman's game and crisping up the route running ability for Bateman. So as opposed to just being that downfield guy. So it'll be interesting to see how that develops over the course of this year and what that means for the Gophers overall. Before we get into our next prospect, we got a message from our friends over at Dynasty Owner. The best fantasy football leagues are those where every owner constantly pays attention, responds to trade offers, changes their lineup, and are always looking to improve their team. There is no offseason for these owners. That's who you're challenging yourself against in Dynasty Owner, other elite fantasy football players who are committed to competing. Dynasty Owner is the only fantasy football platform with a patent game using actual NFL salaries and contracts. Combine this with a salary cap, elite trading options, advanced team rosters, and devoted elite owners to compete against, and you're faced with the same decisions NFL owners and general managers must make. If you're ready to take on the best, then don't miss out. Join the waitlist at dynastyowner.com. That's dynastyowner.com. We also got a message from our friends over at FanDraft. Take your league's fantasy football draft to the next level with FanDraft, the online fantasy football draft board. FanDraft makes your draft feel like the actual NFL draft with features such as streaming ticker, live draft clock, custom logos, team walk-up songs, multiple draft board displays, and more. FanDraft can be used offline for in-person drafts by exporting the display via projector or on a large screen TV for the league to enjoy. It can also be used fully online, and any number of your league owners can join the draft remotely. That's huge. You can perform both traditional and auction-style drafts as well. FanDraft also supports IDPs, rookie-only drafts, keepers, and just about any customization to meet your league's requirements. You can sign up for a free trial account at FanDraft.com. When you're ready to order the pro account, make sure to use the promo code ROTOPOD15 to save 15% off your purchase. That's ROTOPOD15, ROTOPOD15. All caps. Again, that's fandraft.com and use promo code ROTOPOD15 to save 15% on FanDraft. All right, let's move to the Big 12 for a moment.
Hey, John.
Yes.
Sorry, I just wanted to mention real quickly with the Big 10. I'm not kidding. Some people are going to probably think this is like a bit or something, but there's this Indiana receiver named Wop Fillier who's really good. And people aren't going to mention him that much because they're probably going to think it's just, oh, Indiana slot receiver or something. Every single one of his 3 years at Indiana, he has outplayed the baseline of that passing game. He's got hurt quite a bit, so that's the main concern. But he might be like a Deontay Johnson kind of player or something like that, and people should definitely keep an eye on him.
Okay. Is Deontay Johnson from Florida as well?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe.
Okay. Yeah, because Wop Fillier's from Tampa. I do just tend to believe in receivers from Florida just as a general guiding principle.
Better than it's we like it when our Big Ten stars are not from the Big Ten states.
That we do. And speaking of one of those guys, actually, before we move on to the Big 12, just quickly, I wanted to go over Chris Olave. He's a guy who I don't think like is going to necessarily wow at the combine. Like, I don't think he has that element to his game, but from the time he was a freshman, in 2018, like that guy just knew exactly what he was doing. Like, he had a plan and he executed it like with every single route, it seemed like. So his freshman year, obviously that's a receiving core where he's going up against Terry McLaurin, Paris Campbell, KJ Hill, and Johnny Dixon for targets. So he only saw 16 targets in the 7 games in which he appeared. caught 12 of them for 197 yards and three touchdowns in those games. Last year, was able to be a little bit more featured in the offense. It wasn't quite as pass-heavy with the move from Dwayne Haskins to Justin Fields, but 76 targets, he caught 49 of them for 849 and 12. So that he had a kind of dizzying touchdown rate as well. So he plays on the outside. He's 6'1", 188 is his listing. He's, I think, going to see even more volume this upcoming season for the Buckeyes with K.J. Hill being gone. And, I mean, he's going to be him or Garrett Wilson. Garrett Wilson, yeah, really interesting, but not draft eligible. Like, those are going to be, like, the top two receivers on what I think is the best team in college football, Ohio State. So a lot of people are going to get a lot of looks at Olave this season. I don't think he's going to disappoint.
Yeah, I don't. Him and Wilson, like you said, are both really promising, and there are people who don't understand how to evaluate talent with the NFL and college football who were trying to tell you all before the draft that KJ Hill was like the best, one of the best receivers in the draft, and we said no, he isn't, and those people who were wrong, of course. They were very sorrowful in their they retracted their wrong reports and admitted they didn't know what they were talking about.
They're coming back and just saying, well, he shouldn't have been a seventh rounder.
He's a steal now.
Yeah,
that's it, rebranded. That's what it is. No, Olave and Wilson were really useful last year because they specifically were the hint that KJ Hill isn't that good. You know he's not that good because look at what these two are doing. Those two, with a big age disadvantage, were better last year, and they're both going to be big-time producers this year.
Yes.
Or, you know, the next chance they get.
Yeah, so I'm really excited to see, like, Olave is someone who, like, I want to, like, plant my flag on among this, you know, really, really loaded receiving. Maybe, like, he can be my Amon-Ra St. Brown, like, as far as, like, he doesn't get quite mentioned in, like, the top three or top four when you mention this 2021 receiving class, but there's a lot to like about his game.
He might be, like, a Slayton type, but who goes earlier in the draft, something like that.
I can get behind that for sure. Okay, let's move on. Let's get one Big 12 guy, and then let's move on over to the ACC. Tylan Wallace, someone who I don't think we would be having this discussion about it had he not suffered that knee injury late last season. I think he would have just gone straight to the NFL. But because he's coming back, maybe it had the domino effect. Maybe that's why Chuba Hubbard opted to come back, maybe because Oklahoma State on paper now has a ridiculously loaded offense. I mean, you got Spencer Sanders back there at quarterback. He should be a little bit better this year. Again, Chuba Hubbard entering his senior year after a dominant junior year. And then Tylan Wallace the same way. But he's the one that's coming off injury. So I guess among the receivers that we've talked about, he might have the most to prove right now.
Yeah, and he's one I have to admit I have trouble figuring out what I think. I think he's good to some extent, but I can't really convince myself that I know he's more than a third or a fourth round kind of prospect, but he had the big volume in 2018, which would have been his true sophomore year, right? So yes, that's really impressive, that the volume that he took up. The efficiency was a little more ambiguous, so I don't know whether I consider it above baseline, but to even carry the baseline as a true sophomore is itself a lot of points for the prospect profile. So With the injury, you know, I don't know what was it? Was it torn ACL or something?
Torn ACL on Halloween.
Oh God, that sucks. Okay, so if he comes back okay from that, then I would project him as kind of like a round three kind of pick. Which, to be clear, if it weren't such a strong class, I would project him higher than that. Like, I wouldn't have any problem with him in the second round or whatever, and pending his athletic workout, his athletic metrics. Maybe even first round. I don't know. It's a really strong class where we have these other guys ahead of him who we just don't really have any questions about, or at least not many. And so I feel like, yeah, Tylan Wallace, if a good workout would help, another good season where he stays healthy and produces at the baseline or higher would help. In the meantime, I got to kind of leave him in I think that sort of round three, you know, keep an eye on him kind of category.
Yeah, I'm. when it comes to like Oklahoma State receivers, like the production is whenever you're the number one in Mike Gundy's offense, like you're always going to put up huge numbers. And if you don't, someone else is going to replace you, and then they are going to put up the big numbers. So the numbers you need to kind of read between the lines when it comes to Wallace. And I think that you brought up the important contextualization when it comes to looking at the baseline, and yes, like he did carry that baseline his sophomore year, and then he was explosive last year before, like pre-injury, and you know his last game against Iowa State, one of the better defenses that they faced, you know, catching eight balls for 131 and a touchdown in that one, really impressive stuff, going over 10 yards a target over the course of the games that he played. But yeah, I think that it's just a fact of. This class is so loaded with guys that might have more convincing athleticism out there, and when you take the numbers away, Wallace maybe does, like you said, fall a couple tiers behind some of the guys that we've talked about. Let's move on over to the ACC. It's hard to know like where exactly to start because like there's so much to choose from here.
There's a lot, yeah.
And you know it's almost like shocking that we don't get to start at Clemson. And you know I feel like we I don't mean it like jokingly like it. I feel like we were robbed of Justin Ross this year, but I really do like hold out hope that he ends up being able to pick his football career back up because I think he could be just one of the more generational talents. And you know I think that he would have had that Ja'Marr Chase. Type of season last year if he was playing for LSU. Not that playing for Trevor Lawrence is a bad thing or anything, but he had that spinal issue. He had surgery. He's going to miss all of this year. I don't know if we'll ever see him again in a Clemson uniform one way or the other, but he's a ridiculous talent. But looking elsewhere in the ACC, I'd like to start with Sage Surratt of Wake Forest, and he's someone who I think you can definitely start to poke holes if you want to in terms of the production or look at the system the way that you could with like Rondale Moore, where it's like the volume is just so crazy. But Surratt has like the more prototypical or not even prototypical, like it kind of a rare frame at 6'3", 215. And like, yes, like he gets force fed a lot of targets because Wake Forest, I think, has the most up-tempo offense in all of college football, like 85 plays per game or something like that. And they do skew towards the pass more than the run. So that he's got the context to help him put up huge numbers. But in nine games last year before he suffered a shoulder injury to finish his season, he was targeted 102 times, caught 66 of them for 1,001 yards and 11 touchdowns at 6'3", 215. When he also had Scotty Washington and Kendall Hinton drawing a lot of targets as well. So he's going to be the focus of opposing defenses this year. But at the same time, he's really going to be the focus of the Wake Forest offense this year. So I think that, you know, it might look crazy seeing his name at the top of the receiver rankings on the college football side for fantasy purposes, but he's just going to get peppered with targets this year. And I think he's going to catch a lot of them at an explosive rate.
Yeah, he was a third year player last year. So he to grade as a really high range NFL prospect, you really need to start producing at a standout level at that point. And he at least got really close to clinching that detail. Like he had the injury, which complicated things. And I got to say, if he had played those games that he missed, and that's at Clemson among them, maybe his peripherals would have suffered a little bit because like the Clemson game is a good way to end up with 40 yards on 11 targets or something like that, which can tank your efficiency. But in the nine games that he played, he caught he caught about 65% of his targets at 10 yards a target, more or less. And this is an offense that completed about 60% of its targets. So he's at baseline or above it for the catch rate. And then he's two full yards ahead of the baseline for the yards per attempt consideration. So that's good to see. It's for me, for a third year player to do that, it's kind of like a checked box kind of thing. Like I'm not ready to rank him really high, but he's definitely on the watch list for potential promotion in the future. For now, I'm probably putting Surratt in like a round four kind of category, which is not, it might sound critical or something, but it has a lot to do with, again, just like how good the wide receiver talent pool is. And Do you happen to know, was that shoulder injury that Surratt had, was that a dislocated shoulder? Did you happen to read anything of it?
I'm not totally sure what okay. it was. Dave Clawson.
Dislocated is bad is the only thing that I'm going to say. It's like I think it is that a separated shoulder sucks, but it's not as likely to turn into a chronic thing as a properly like dislocated shoulder joint. So that's something we might want to keep an eye out for in his eventual, you know, medical considerations.
Yeah. If you've ever seen a picture of Wake Forest coach Dave Clawson, he kind of looks like a crazy guy. I don't think that he would ever like let one like single detail out if he could avoid it. Although, was Wake Forest the one that had the leak a couple years ago?
Sorry, what was that? Wake Forest had the what?
There was like a leak where like someone was like selling their playbook or something.
Oh, right.
Wake Forest actually. So take back what I said, or maybe that just makes Dave Clawson double down and never say a single word.
Maybe
about
it's a false
anymore.
Flag. Clawson leaked a fake playbook.
I think that was part of it. There was some crazy story. Like I'll try to like find it and like retweet it this week or something, because that was so funny. It was like a disgruntled former like guy from like the old coaching staff, and he had like an axe to grind with Dave Clawson. Oh my gosh.
Dave Clawson did the Tyrion thing where he gave a different playbook to all the assistant coaches he didn't trust.
Yes.
And he found out that guy and had him murked.
Yeah, just absolutely murked. Gosh. A lot of Wake Forest talk, and I'm kind of into it. I like this Wake Forest team, and I think Sam Hartman is going to do well. Constant intrigue out of Winston-Salem, of course. Let's stay in the state of North Carolina. Let's go up to Chapel Hill. Dyami Brown, and
why not?
Sure, he's good at receiver. You get the Saint attachment onto your name, a prefix onto your name. Him and Daz Newsome combined for like this absolutely electric wide receiver tandem at North Carolina, and part of UNC's just kind of huge football resurgence under Mack Brown that, you know, kind of came out of nowhere. He flipped Sam Howell from Florida State to kind of like mark his first big recruiting win before he even coached a game at UNC. And now Sam Howell, you know, has the look of a future first round pick at quarterback once he's eligible, and he distributes the ball to Newsome and Brown and lets them work their magic with both of those guys. Very, very interesting. It seems like Daz Newsome, a little bit more of like the high volume slot guy, whereas Dyami Brown, a little bit more dynamic, plays on the outside, a little bit bigger of a frame, asked to do a little bit more deep down the field. Both these guys, pretty interesting.
Yeah, for Brown to put up the numbers that he did last year, a lot of kill shots, 12 touchdowns on 51 catches. He's also listed at 6'1", 195. So if he's 6 foot, 190 as a true second-year player, and he's going into his third year, maybe pushing his previously actually listed height, weight, that's pretty good, because that means when he's going to be ready to go into the NFL, he's going to have an NFL frame. Like, it's just one thing we don't need to worry about with him. And if he puts together 2 years in a row of explosive above baseline production like this, he's going to have to be on the short list. Like, I'm pretty close to putting Dyami Brown into the same tier as Tylan Wallace in my rankings, like in that third, fourth round kind of threshold where I'm also totally prepared to move them up higher if things go a certain way. Newsome, it's a little harder for me to figure out a guy like him, but he helped himself last year, as you said. He caught 72 passes. I'm not sure I see much indication of big playability, but if there is, maybe it's indicated in how the year before he had a punt return for a touchdown, and he had 96 yards on 7 carries for a touchdown. So we'll see if he can get the yardage after the catch. But in the meantime, he's at least getting open, catching the ball pretty reliably. And 10 touchdowns on 72 catches isn't bad for a more underneath receiver either.
Yeah. So, Sam Howell was just facilitating. I think his like touchdown rate last year like was like 9% of his throws or something went for
him. And Slovis were both nuts for freshman quarterbacks last year.
Unreal. So, Sam Howell actually replaced and helped facilitate this change. So Sage Surratt's brother, Chaz, used to be the quarterback at UNC. And then he made that classic position switch once Sam Howell got there. He's like, okay, well, I'm not going to start at quarterback anymore. switches to linebacker, and he racked up, I think, like over 100 tackles last year, and I believe I've seen him ranked as 115 solo tackles or total tackles a year ago, and now he is considered to be like one of the top, if not the top, inside linebacker prospects. So that's some more found money for UNC that they've had. So I don't know, fun little anecdote. Those Surratt brothers, they can play some football.
Yeah, and you're going to have to be ready to trade up in your IDP league rookie drafts so you can get what is his name? Chaz Surratt. So yeah, you're going to need those annoying Bubba Elliott and what are they? The other Sheldon Richardson. Those defensive guy touchdowns, because he's going to do like wildcat quarterback and things that make everybody very angry.
Ooh, yes. So he
got to get him number one in the IDP rookie draft.
The entity. Okay, let's round things out for these draft eligible guys. Let's go.
Tamorian Terry in ASCC is I don't know what kind of roundedness his game has. He might only be a downfield guy, but they're listing him at around 6'4", 210. So as long as he comes in with like that Denzel Mims kind of frame, like 6'3", 207, he might have a pretty similar profile as a prospect, because I think his production's already better than Mims's ever was at Baylor. Like Terry was safely above the Florida State baseline last year, doing over 10 yards a target. As I guess it was his third year, so
redshirt sophomore.
He kind of needed to come through with a season like that, but he totally answered the call, and we otherwise have reason to believe that he runs in kind of like the low 4.3s.
Yeah, there's some anecdotal evidence of Terry just absolutely dusting opposing defenses. Like once he gets the ball in his hands, like he just runs away. And you know, I think there's also the fact that Florida State, since he's been there, has probably been enduring its like worst period of football since like pre-Bobby Bowden, and the quarterback play, I don't expect it to be a whole lot better this year, so I don't know how much better the production's going to be, but it can't be worse, and I think that the Mike Norvell offense might end up helping some things. So Terry should be well over 1,000 yards in terms of being a receiver again this year, and he does have that blazing speed and the very intriguing frame. You know, maybe he answers the question of like, what if Auden Tate was fast?
Yeah. I mean, he really could come out with a Mims-like profile, but just better, in my opinion. I I'm higher on Terry than maybe most people, or lower on Mims than most people. I'm not sure. But yeah, if you're producing like that and you can run like that, at some point you just got to assume that the player is what they look like, you know?
Yes, definitely. So just good stuff from him. You want to talk a little bit about some of the sophomore receivers, the guys that shined as freshmen that obviously won't be draft eligible this year, but you know, could be filling the air on this podcast like a year ago from today.
I can't remember if we mentioned Seth Williams, but he's not in the sophomore category, but he was the last one, the last guy that I was thinking draft eligible. And I think Seth Williams could be really good. I actually think he could be like a first round player, even in this really crowded group. But as far as the sophomore guys, would you put the Oklahoma, Hazelwood? Is he kind of on the top of the list?
He definitely came in that way, like coming into last year. I thought that he was the best receiver from that group, but
a lot of targets open.
There are, but he got injured working out this spring, so I don't know if he's going to play this year or not. But yeah,
that's why we need you here, because I'm just going to name the infirmary as my watch list.
You're good. So for me, the best sophomore receiver, you can call me biased all you want, and generally I am, but I think objectively George Pickens is the best receiver.
Oh yeah,
among the 2020 sophomores, he is ridiculous. I'm not afraid to say that he's the best receiver that Georgia's had since AJ Brown or AJ Green. 6'3", 190. He kept getting better over the course of the entire season. Just destroyed Baylor in that Sugar Bowl. 12 catches on 15 targets for 175. Probably the reason why I won that little like DFS tournament that you, me, and Jeff Erickson and Joe Bartle had. He silky smooth athlete, really tall. Even caught a touchdown against LSU in a terrible game. I don't like to talk about that game. he got in a fight with a Georgia Tech guy at one point. There's everything for a Georgia fan to like about Pickens, but I think also like on the field, just an absolutely dynamic player at his position.
Yeah, I agree. Pickens is at he's already nearly a lock for the first round, in my opinion. Like, pending all, you know, realistic qualifiers that go with that, he's pretty much already there. Like, it's that level of benefit of the doubt that he's established. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of ceiling he can reach into. And unlike these guys that we've been talking about, he might actually have a lower level of competition in his draft. He doesn't have to deal with these guys like Amon-Ra St. Brown and Ja'Marr Chase. So he could go really high, even if we don't think he's as good necessarily as some of these other guys. Not to rule out that possibility either. Like, he could just be exactly as good as Chase and Jalen Waddle and whoever else. But yeah, that's a good call. Pickens is definitely the top sophomore, even regardless of how Hazelwood turns out or whatever. I guess there's a couple Pac-12 guys. Micah Pittman for Oregon is not built like Michael. Like, he's more like a slot receiver in the NFL. I think he's like 5'11", 200, something like that. So he got injured last year, but he also was earning rave reviews, I remember, in practices. And he got back into the offense when he was not hurt, or when he's healed. So that's always good to see. If the guy recovers from the injury and they still leave him on the sideline, that's a little concerning. They put Pittman right back in, so we'll see what he can do in his second year. And then I guess it's, yeah, Drake London with USC. They're doing the big slot thing with him. He looks a lot like Jalen Hurd as far as like being kind of lanky, 6'5", 220 kind of thing. But him being a true freshman, he might be more like 6'5", 240 or something like that by the time he's eligible. And we'll see what kind of movement he has if he does add weight to his frame. But to be like London, 6'4", 6'5", 215, 220 as a true freshman, like, that's already, you know, NFL kind of build. And he was automatic last year.
Yeah, definitely. So I like what I see from Drake London. We're going to see a true test of, like, Clemson got a couple of the best receivers, surprise, surprise, in the 2020 or 2019 class, in Frank Ladson and Joe Nauta. And neither of them played a ton last year because they obviously had Justin Ross, they had T. Higgins, Amari Rodgers is still there. But with Higgins and Ross out of the picture, one of those two, if not both, are going to step up and really get the opportunity to show what they're made of. I like both of those guys. I think they're both really, really extremely talented. Just another like group of classic Clemson outside receivers, you know, 6'2", 6'3", with standout athleticism on top of it. Neither of them did a ton as true freshmen last year. I don't really mark that against them. And I know for a fact that they're going to get the chances this year. And, you know, with Trevor Lawrence entering his junior year, you know, he might enter a level of play that we really, you know, Joe Burrow level in terms of like the game slowing down.
He's Megatron. Yeah, Megatron, the quarterback. It's insane.
So look for those guys to really step up. And we already talked about Garrett Wilson a little bit, but he's someone that we like a lot. And David Bell, I think we hit on most of like those top
The mid-major, mm-hmm. The mid-major guys to watch, CJ Johnson at East Carolina. He already looks like a bully, and he had offers from those other Carolina bigger schools, so he could be pretty interesting. He's like 6'2", 225 or something like that, pretty mean on the field. And then Dante Wright with Colorado State. He's a receiver, technically, but he kind of looks like Austin Eckler on the field. He's kind of interesting. He had a big freshman season last year, even with Warren Jackson drawing a billion targets.
Right. So, yeah, you had a really good piece up on the college football section about some of those mid-major receivers, so be sure to check that out as well. But that's about all I got for this week on our little, you know, prospect adventure for this week's version of the NFL podcast. So for Mario Puig, I'm John McKechnie. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.